Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 275 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyrer, your host once again. And today my guest is Joey Vitale. And Joey is an attorney in the Chicago area who focuses on trademark law and providing a really great service to clients, frankly, across the nation and literally to some extent around the world, applying for trademarks here in the U.S. And his story is a really interesting one of how he, you know, had some major kind of events in his life, both professionally and in health-wise, that all directed him to the desire to build a practice that had a work-life balance that would meet his objectives, both personally and from a health perspective. And it's interesting how those things drove him to create this very successful practice in trademark law with a number of different products, some of which are online products, some of which are services-based. And I think it's just kind of a really fascinating kind of story on how this all comes together to create the modern, you know, solo and small firm practice. So without any further delay, hey, let's listen to Joey Vitale. Joey Vitale, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks so much for having me, Neil.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun chatting with you today. As I mentioned earlier on our pre-call, we've kind of danced around each other and been familiar with each other's existence and product and business line here for a while now. So having the opportunity to actually chat with you is really exciting. So, but for the benefit of those who don't know, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. Well, first of all, Neil, I just have to say that the version of me 5 years ago would be floored by the fact that I'm doing this podcast with you. I remember when I was feeling that pressure to go out on my own to start my law firm, and I was seeing people like you have all of these followers, have these cool podcasts, and I was like, man, like I was just as much of a sponge as I could be. And so the fact that I'm here is a real honor, and I don't take that lightly. Thank you for bringing me up here.
That's very kind of you to say that.
But to answer your question about a little bit of background on me, I made the mistake of going to law school because my dad said that it was either that or construction. And I quickly found out that in most areas of the law, if you're going to be a lawyer, you have to like arguing with people. And that's not something I'm particularly good at. So after struggling for a couple of years at a litigation firm, I decided to go out on my own. Didn't have any experience in business law, frankly, but I was connected with some really amazing mentors, and we found some great coaches and things like that. And I was off to the races with what is now Indy Law, a trademark only law firm.
It's fascinating that you would not only leap into a solo practice, but in a practice area that you had no background in. And only a couple, 3 years after, you know, being in a litigation firm to start with.
Yeah.
I feel your pain because I was litigating, and I found that the central aspect of litigation was, if not arguing, at least having to articulate the opposite side of a position.
Right.
And it was fraught with the opportunity of devolving into an argument. And I'm not that kind of person. I'd rather not, you know, deal with that kind of.
Yeah, it was really difficult for me to see the reality of situations that were very not one-sided and trying as much as I could to argue just one of the sides of the case.
To make them one-sided. And as an indication of how ill prepared I was for that, all my best friends in the legal community are attorneys that I had cases against.
Mm.
So you're not supposed to be best friends with the opposing counsel.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned, Joey, that's a pretty big jump to go out on your own. The reality is, and I'm just getting vulnerable with you and your audience, Neil, I was moving to Chicago and couldn't find a job. So after I kept getting declined for interviews, I was like, if I don't do something to go out on my own and get clients, I might be unemployed when we make this move to Chicago.
Yeah. So that is a motivator.
Yeah.
So that's your second motivational crisis, you know, law versus construction, or how do I pay the rent?
Yeah. And, you know, I think there was a false narrative in my head because I initially was very excited to go to law school, even though it started as just this is better than concrete. But I started getting very into the idea of, you know, environmental law or social justice law or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think in law school, at least for me, there was this reality crash very quickly that if you're going to find a good job out of law school in one of those areas, you're going to be working for the bad guy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So looking back, I think one of the reasons why I was drawn to business law was because it seemed like a really good option for me to help people and use my law degree. I think now I can look back and see a lot more ways I could have done that. But I felt at the time very much like doors were closed just because it seemed like, well, if you want to make good money in these areas, it's not going to be as fulfilling as you would think.
You mentioned that you had some good mentors that led you in the right direction. Where were those mentors from? And were they in the legal space or were they family members or just kind of how did that mentorship relationship
great evolve? Great question. So two come to mind. I'm the first lawyer and really the first, I don't want to say true entrepreneur, but I think I was the first person to kind of go out on my own so quickly and not be more entrepreneurial in a family business. And so the first mentor was one of my best friends that I connected with at a bar association who does business law and focuses on helping tech startups, which isn't really the niche that I focus on, but she was so generous with showing me how to build websites and do all this other stuff to get things off the ground.
And was this in the Chicago area?
That was actually in St. Louis before I made the move.
Okay.
And the idea at first was that I could work for her of counsel and then work virtually. And the more we worked together, we quickly realized that her business at the time just wasn't quite making enough to pay me what she wanted to pay me. So that also was a nice experience/confidence boost to go out on my own. The second great mentor was also from St. Louis, more of a sales coach. I'm no longer working with her now, but I'll never forget when I walked into her office, there was a big beanbag chair in the corner that I sat on. And she said, tell me what you want to build. And I had this idea of, at the time, a subscription law firm for business owners. And she said, okay, interesting. Who do you want to work with specifically? And I said, I don't know yet. And she said, well, what about grandmas on Etsy? And I was like, what? And she goes, I know it's kind of out there, but if you would be interested in that market, I am well connected in dozens of very large Facebook groups for Etsy makers that are always asking legal questions. And we can really easily start to gain visibility around you in those groups. So
isn't that interesting?
So that became my first niche.
Grandma's on Etsy.
Yeah, it was. I loved, I mean, if you're going to go out on your own and you're a little scared of working with clients that might be intimidating or whatever, this was better, a dream.
Who better than grandmas on Etsy?
It was great. And, you know, they were so kind and everything else. And looking back, I think what was so great about it was they were more in like a hobby retirement phase of their life for a lot of them. And yet what they were building, there was so much passion around, and they had already built up a livelihood elsewhere that they were willing to pay good money to protect what mattered to them so much.
Well, it's a perfect fit, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's very hard to find a mean-spirited grandmother. So, you know,
there were some in New York that weren't quite good.
There you go. But at least it's a client base that you can feel comfortable working with. I as an estate planner work with some lovely clients who are, if you can believe it, older than me, and they're just a delight to work with. So it's understandable. So these were a couple of great mentors that helped lead you in the right direction. And then you moved to Chicago and you start to build this effort. When or about did you then actually bring on a coach to help you expand your process?
Yeah. So the first
time, what kind of coach?
Yeah, good question. So we were about a year into building the law firm, and I was starting to build the beginnings of a team. It was starting to feel less like every month was this crazy rush to get a new set of sales. And I had my first really serious panic attack. Long story short, I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, and it took a while for the doctors to realize that I have a pretty rare condition. And so the medication they were giving me to treat the anxiety was actually making it worse.
Oh dear.
And so when I got out in outpatient therapy and things, they said, if you don't want to see us anytime soon, it's going to take a while for your brain to rewire itself from this pretty traumatic experience. And we don't want you to relapse into any of this. So you really need to take good care of your health. And at that point, I realized that just wanting to build the business wasn't going to be the point. It was really going to be, how can we do this in a way that allows me to go to bed every night like a baby and is also not stressful for my team. And so the first coach that I started working with was Melissa Shanahan from Velocity Work.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's amazing. She works now with just law firm owners. And I'll never forget, I think it was the second, she facilitates these leadership team retreats. So she helps you build a leadership team around you. And then every quarter, you plan out with her in the room, you know, what are the big goals and rocks going to be this quarter? How are they aligned with our yearly goals and so on? And I remember we spent the first part of the day just dreaming up, you know, in 10 years, what could this business look like? And we were throwing all of these cool ideas on the big post-it board and things like a food truck that was legal that would drive around Chicago and just give like nonprofit legal services. Our pro bono legal services. And we had all these really cool things and, you know, retreats that we would go on with our biggest referral partners. And then the conversation went to money. And Melissa said, okay, let's talk more about, you know, in 5 or 10 years, Joey, where do you want the business to be at financially? And I thought about it for a minute and then I smiled and I said, well, I've been reading a lot about health and wellness, and there's some great books on happiness. And according to some studies, I will hit like peak happiness if I just make 75K a year. And according to systems like Profit First, if the business makes 150K a year and I take home half of it, the business will be good. So the end goal is 150K. And the whole team kind of looked at me and she was like, Joey, I'm not here to judge your goals. Like, there's nothing wrong with that number, but we can't do things on the board if that's the revenue that we're working with. And that was a real wake up call for me to say, okay, how can we make sure that me and the rest of my team and our clients are prioritizing health and wellness, but that's not sacrificing our growth and the dreams of the firm.
I'm not sure what if I understand what she meant by we can't do what's on the board if that's your revenue goal. So, say you needed to shoot higher?
Yes.
Okay.
She was like, if we're going to get to a point where we have a legal food truck driving around Chicago,
okay,
that's going to cost more. If we're going to be building a team to do X, Y, and Z and be leading these retreats and all this other stuff, it'll be really hard to do that if we have, you know, less than 75K to work with, because the other 75K goes to you. And the way that my team and I now talk about it is we don't stay small to stay safe. And I think there is a danger for a lot of entrepreneurs and law firm owners who are taking work-life balance seriously to purposefully aim small, because they think that if they aim any bigger, it'll necessarily be stressful.
Yeah, it's a paradox, because I think that's what most people do feel.
Yeah.
Is that if I shoot higher, that there's going to be more staff, more budget, more marketing, more operational costs, you know, more things to do, less time to do it. Okay, I'm already stressed out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was talking with a friend earlier, maybe about a month ago, and they said, you know, for a while I was wanting to build $1 million a year law firm. But when I really thought about it, I don't want that life of having to run $1 million a year law firm. And I thought that was interesting, because again, I don't think that any revenue milestone is good or bad or too much or not enough, like on its face. I don't think that it's necessary that $1 million a year business is hard to run.
Well, we've had lots of folks on this program, and there's others that I know around the country and in a couple of cases around the world, where the bigger their law firm got, the less they worked.
Right. Yep.
That was their mantra. That was their objective. I want to get so big and so profitable that I can work less. And I want to structure my organization to make that the objective. Not necessarily having a dollar figure in mind or growth level in mind. What I really have in mind is me working less.
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, ever since I was working with Melissa, now I've worked with a handful of coaches. I've done coaching training myself. And one thing that I found to be very helpful is figure out whatever those deep core values are that have compelled you to starting your own business. Spoiler alert, it's probably either freedom, impact, family, or some combination of those three, and then make sure that you're keeping that or those core values in mind when you're coming up with the revenue goal.
It's easy to have a disconnect, however.
Yeah.
You know, to have a set of beliefs and values that you feel govern the establishment and the growth of your practice, and yet in application, be completely disconnected with that. And I think that's where people get into difficulty. If your business is inconsistent with who your personality is, then you're going to have a challenge.
Yeah, that's well said. You know? I think that I love seeing so many law firm owners continue to grow, continue. I mean, the size of Facebook groups that are related to law firm ownership growing is really cool to see. I think the next trend that I hope to see is people seeing the different kinds of examples of people living out their version of success and realizing that there are a lot of ways to run a successful law firm. And there's nothing that you have to do to get there.
Well, again, we have
gone through this horrible year plus of the pandemic, which by necessity has created a dramatic shift in how legal services are offered and delivered within our communities. And I think you're going to see that continue to accelerate, even as the pandemic winds down here, knock on wood, hopefully never happens again. I think you're going to see that continue to accelerate. And just as you said, people are going to find new and different ways to deliver legal services. I like your idea of the legal food truck. Reminds me of, you know, the free law clinic down in the city that all the really cool attorneys would work at in the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like Paul Newman definitely has to be an attorney there at that clinic, or driving your legal food truck.
Yeah. And you know, this ties into something. One of the few takeaways that I got from law school was I was in a nonprofit clinic. And one of the first pieces of advice that we got from the professor that ran the nonprofit clinic was, you will hear a lot of people come to you with great ideas of a nonprofit that they want to run or get started. Before you help them with anything, you always want to ask them if they've done research on existing nonprofits that are already in place and making a great impact around that topic, because it's a lot of work to start something new. And one of the cool things about more creative or, you know, the disruptive legal place, I think that once we get more comfortable with putting our ego to the side, there are a lot of cool conversations happening around, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this existed? And whether I take the lead on it or somebody else does, how can this community help make this thing happen?
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works, and we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time, because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. This episode is brought to you by Security Plus. Do you ever worry about ransomware, losing client data, or your employees getting phished?
You know that 29% of law firms have suffered a data breach of some type or another? As a solo or small firm lawyer, getting hacked can make a crushing impact to the high integrity and reputation that you've spent a lifetime building. That's why I love Security Plus, and I'm excited to bring them on as a new sponsor. It's a turnkey cybersecurity solution built for solo and small firm lawyers like you, who often lack the clarity, time, and skills to protect themselves from cybersecurity threats. Security Plus protects your firm with 8 security solutions. And the best part is that it requires just 1 hour of your time to get everything up and running. So check out this new solution at securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. And that's securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. You can grab their security checklist as a freebie and lock in 10% discount for life. Again, that's securityplus.io/Neil. Well, let's talk about your practice now as it's evolved there in Chicago. It's centered in Chicago, but it's flung out around the country and around the world, is it not?
Yeah, we've got clients all over the place. One of the reasons why we decided to focus on trademarks, because it would allow us to work with the network that I was building that was across the US and now global. The other main reason why we focus on trademarks, and this is the primary reason, is because so many of the business owners that I was connecting with that were asking for my help, that again, when I started, I didn't know any of this stuff. So many of them didn't ask about trademarks and then circled back with me months or years later saying, hey, we just got a cease and desist letter after we, you know, started pouring thousands of dollars in the Facebook ads. We didn't even know that this other brand existed. Do we have to rebrand? And
yeah,
we realized that out of all of these potential legal risks that could happen to new and emerging businesses, realizing that your brand was accidentally infringing on another brand and you had to go through the entire naming process again, that was a particularly frustrating and expensive problem for new businesses to deal with.
Yeah. So seeing the result of not having taken these precautions and these steps, trying to help clients resolve those issues, it became clear to you, I guess, that, hey, we could serve this community better by preventing this in the first place.
Yeah. And not only that, but we could serve our audience better with trademarks if we did nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, focus down on that. And even
that really helped clarify our processes and things.
And even in that space, you know, you can't be all trademarks to all people of all kinds. It's a little overwhelming and daunting. So you kind of even niche down further, have you not, to a particular clientele?
Yeah, yeah. So what started out as that Etsy
grandmother to Etsy's
community, yeah, that really blossomed into this wider community of artists and creatives over time. And then we found these pockets that were growing very rapidly of people who call themselves creative entrepreneurs. In those groups, you'll find a lot of graphic designers, wedding planners, photographers, videographers, website designers, things like that. And so we then started working with more of those people. And about 2 or 3 years ago, we realized that as we were gaining more name recognition around business owners that were newer or were having a kind of business model that just had a longer term ROI and growth idea, we were meeting more and more people who just weren't ready and didn't have the budget to work with us one-to-one. So at that point, we started creating courses. And one of our main programs now is a DIY trademark course that has over 300 members in it. And as my team and I were putting together that course and promoting it, I then tapped into this growing, very cool space of course creators. And now that has really become one of our biggest referral bases and places where we're doing a lot of collaborations of people who are building courses or membership sites or are coaches in that space.
Well, I think it feeds off of and caters to and supports a whole growing segment of the economy, this gig economy, this internet economy, this online virtual economy that is, you know, just exploding over the last 5 years. It really speaks to that community. And like the grandmother on Etsy, a lot of folks, you know, I raise my hand here as being one of them, you know, start doing something just kind of for fun, like a podcast,
yeah,
or for their own personal benefit, like a podcast, or to get some free advice, like a podcast, mm-hmm. You know, and all of a sudden you realize 5 years later, you have a business and you've done nothing to protect that business.
Yes.
And it's true, as you said, with musicians, just started playing guitar at a bar one night, and now I'm playing every weekend. And pretty soon I have to figure out whether I want to keep playing guitar for a living or keep going to my day job. And they've done nothing to protect their music business.
Yeah. Right.
So you see these stories all the time now, right?
We do. And it's interesting because yes, we hear a lot of, you know, nightmare stories of I didn't get this protected and now I've got all these consequences. What's interesting too is we also are just seeing a lot of mistakes happening where business owners who are smart, who have enough experience to know that they should be risk averse. It's kind of like they're assuming what law school is about and they're becoming so risk averse and so perfectionist about the legal side that they're not taking risks that they need to be making for their businesses to grow. So a lot of what we're trying to do now is educate business owners on here are your biggest areas of risk. Here are things that you should be putting in place as quickly as possible. And how can we confidently tell you to not care about the rest until your business hits a certain level?
Yeah. Not to focus on the small things that are inconsequential.
Neil, I can't tell you how many business owners come to me who are very, very proud of having this super long, well-written contract that they can explain what all of the different clauses mean, and they're making under $30,000 a year.
Yeah. So where does the future lie for indie law? What's your vision now?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because you've achieved a lot of what you set out to do. Or that you're now there.
Yeah.
So where's the next there?
Well, I'm still clarifying what that means in the long term because things have been shifting. What's interesting is that I think when I first started and got excited about being an entrepreneur, I really liked the idea of, you know, first of all, not having a 9-to-5 and not having to commute anywhere. And then I really liked the creative side and putting out content. And then the more that the business started growing, the more that I started taking, you know, sales calls and things more seriously and really appreciating the psychology of helping people decide to work with you so that you can help them. And now I'm at a place where I love being in that team leadership role as much as possible throughout the week. So right now, the goal for me is to continue to do what I can to be the CEO and visionary only of Indie Law and help support and elevate my team as they grow it as well. That all being said, our biggest next step is that this year, we earlier in the year hit our 400th trademark. And so we're wanting to hit 500 in August or September. And so we're about to make a lot more noise about that to rally up support, spotlight our clients, and really celebrate this really big milestone coming up.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Let me ask you a couple of little nuts and bolts questions here before I let you go. I love your website, indielaw.com.
Oh, thank you.
And I like that it reflects kind of a new approach to website design, and that is all one page, pretty much. You've got some tabs at the top, but the bulk of the information that you want to convey to prospective clients is all contained on that first page. It just keeps going
and going and going. Yep. And you've got some great opportunities here to tap out, if you will, and say either I do or I don't want the services. So I don't have to scroll all the way down to find the how can I get involved button. It's all over the first page. And there is more information on this page than I think I've seen on the first page of a website in a long, long time. So I encourage our listeners, even if you're not interested in what Joey does and trademark isn't something that floats your boat, go there and look at how this website is constructed. And it's a work of art, Joey.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Neil. Wow.
You know, I don't know if you did it yourself or you had somebody worked with someone, but the giant infographic in the middle of the page is I just think freaking brilliant.
Oh, well, thank you. You're definitely looking like the 100th iteration. I have a background in graphic design. I know just enough to be dangerous, but that's been a labor of love. The truth is for all of the lawyers listening, I have a version of like a sales page, which is hidden to make it really easy for clients after they book a call with us to really easily just select which flat fee package goes to a checkout page and they can buy. So the second half of our homepage mirrors what we started building out on that sales page. The big reason why it now looks the way it looks is because we realized that a lot of our sales come from referrals. And it comes from referrals who say something like, hey, you got to talk to Joey, you got to talk to Indie Law. Whether you really understand what trademarks are or not, you probably need them for your business. So we realize that when it comes to brand protection, there's a lot of proactive awareness around that. And there's quite a bit of education so people realize what it is, why it's a big problem, what the cost is of waiting. And so I've tried and failed hundreds of times to say all of that very, very quickly. So our homepage is really a redesigned version of an outline that I was forced to create once of what are the different kind of ladder rungs of beliefs that someone would go through from, you know, at the bottom of, you know, ultimately deciding to move forward with us to at the very first rung, like not knowing who we are, what we do, or why this stuff is important.
I frequently reference the Clio report on solo and small firms that is produced annually. And one of the things that they've continually noted in their report year after year is that when potential clients go to your website, they fundamentally want to know two things. They want to know what they don't know and what the process is working with you. What can they expect in terms of the length of time and the steps and the procedures that they're going to go through? They'd like to be able to kind of have a sense of that before they ever speak to anybody in your firm. And this gigantic infographic about the time, the estimated timeline for how long it takes to get your trademark, I just think it's utterly brilliant.
It
has so much information, and I've sat here like, and I'm reading every word of it. I think, wow, this is very, very cool.
Thank you.
So congratulations on that.
Well, Neil, thank you. I just want to say here, I think one of my strengths as a lawyer is creativity, and that graphic and adding that to the homepage was one of the later things that we did. And it was because we created that elsewhere.
Well, yeah, I figured that. Yeah.
And I had a feeling you probably saw that that was built that way, but that can be a really great opportunity for any lawyer. Well, if you've ever created a resource before that you thought was particularly helpful, maybe you did it for a video or it's on your blog somewhere. Is there a potential to really elevate that?
Well, that's exactly what I thought when I saw this. And I've created a bunch of graphics for my estate planning. You know, I call them lead magnets. Mm-hmm. I send them out, right? But how great to have that right here, right? And it flows seamlessly within the content of what else is contained
on the page. And so it is really, I bring it up to have other attorneys like, hey, think about this. Look what he did. I'm thinking about, you know, it sparked my imagination the moment I saw it. And I think a lot of people could learn from that. No. And I wanted to ask you one more thing about, you mentioned it just kind of in passing. Tell me a little bit about the self-study course that you're offering.
Mm-hmm. Great question. So it really started because, again, we were getting to know more and more people who were reaching out or who were seeing me speak at an event or something, and they just knew that price was a huge barrier. And I know that there's a lot of talk right now around like people who can't afford you aren't your people. That may be more true in certain spaces, but I really felt like that just wasn't the case with my niche and my audience. And so we really wanted to do what we could to help those people. And it really did start sales-wise as more of a downsell for people who would reach out. And then if they weren't interested in working with us, they can move forward with the program. One thing that we did was we let them know that if they bought the course and then decided they would rather hire us after all, we would credit everything that they paid for the course and just apply it to our service package. And people seem to like that, even though most people don't take us up on that. They just, you know, go through the course and are happy. But what we've started to do is now figuring out, okay, how can we get more focused on the kinds of people that tend to take us up on the course first? And how can we start promoting that more directly to those types of entrepreneurs?
Well, the thing that immediately sprang to my mind is that, yeah, there's that move afoot to, you know, if they can't afford you, they may not be your ideal client. I've always felt that, well, isn't there something I could give them to ease them becoming a client later?
Right.
Or to make it more frictionless for them to become a client later? Or if not that, can I provide something that will turn them into a raving fan who then can refer clients to me who can't afford me?
Yeah.
And so that was the first thing when I saw, well, this course is brilliant because person could, let's say it's the grandmother on Etsy who's just getting started. She thinks, I might want to kind of look at this trademark thing. I'm going to take it. She satisfies her need, but then when she comes across somebody in her travels that is more established, has a bigger market, has a better product, she'll be the one to refer them to you.
Right. That's been a really interesting unintended consequence of this. Now we are starting to have a lot more conversations with the leaders of like boards and conferences and coaches with large followings to say, hey, can we get brought on board as an affiliate for some of your programs?
Yeah. Well, listen, there's a lot of brilliance in this and a lot of interesting stuff. I spent a great deal of time on your website. And so, yeah, that's what you want. You know, you want people once they get there to stay there. And the longer they stay there, the more apt they are to find something that they can grab onto that fits their need, if not the ultimate product. So well done. Congratulations on doing that. So having said that and helping direct everybody to indielaw.com, tell our audience, Joey, how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up with you on anything you've had to share today, or maybe get involved in establishing a trademark for their business.
Well, thank you. I will say, if you like this episode, the first thing you should do is leave a review.
Thank you.
And take a screenshot of it and send it to Neil.
There you go.
Because I know now as a podcast host that it takes a while for those reviews to get populated. So it really is, I think I love it when people actually send me a copy of the review right before they hit submit. So
yeah, that's a great point. I have to go back and look at some of those because people tell me all the time, hey, I left you a great review and I'm very thankful for it. I need to do a better job of making that more visible.
Yeah. Well, just know you would make Neil's a week if you sent him a screenshot.
Absolutely.
And then in terms of getting in touch with me, you know, you can find me on Facebook, both in Neil's group, but also if you just search Joey Vitale, I'm the one whose face is next to my wife. There's a couple Joey Vitale, so it'll take a while for you to find me, but feel free to message me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Joey, thank you ever so much for taking the time to be with us today. I'm thrilled to have you as a guest on The Law Entrepreneur, and I hope to do it again.
Same. Thanks so much, Neil.
All right. Thanks so much, Joey, for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.